Welcome back. Who was here for Mary Shea this morning, the first session? That was really good. I feel like that was maybe a two-hour presentation in 30 minutes. That was a fire hose of great information. What's always interesting to me about conferences like this is like if there's good sessions, it's a lot of good stuff. And I always think of it kind of like getting a golf lesson and having them teach you like 40 things you should be doing with your golf swing, right? And if you take all 40 of those things into your next round of golf, you're going to have a lot of trouble, right? It's not going to be very good. So, you know, as you write these things down, pick the things you're going to do now, pick the things you're going to do later, take notes on everything, but know that the majority of these things aren't things you're going to do necessarily right away. All right, so for the next 30 minutes, we're going to talk about sales productivity and how to increase the productivity of your sales team. As Tim and Andrew talked about this morning, part of the reason that we came up with doing this sales enablement track is because we talk a lot as marketers about the top of the funnel. We talk a lot about content, we talk a lot about demand. And, you know, one of our directors at our company has said internally once, he said, you know, you can't buy a beer with a marketing qualified lead. So the more marketers start to focus on activities and focus on metrics that actually help close deals, right? Help get deals closed, turn marketing into a profit center. That's a lot of what we're going to talk about today is the things you can be doing as marketers to impact your sales team, not just by giving them content, but with process, tools, and a number of other best practices that our company's using today to directly impact success of their sales team. So a couple things before we get started, copy of this deck. It's not a very word-heavy deck, but if you want a copy of this, it's in the app, it's on the website. I'm happy to give you a copy. The last book I published was called Full Funnel Marketing last spring. If you'd like a copy of that, I'm the worst bookseller in the world. I just give them away. I don't have paperback copies here, but if you want a PDF, you can have that. We have a SaaS best practice guide. I actually don't know why I didn't put it on here, but we have a sales enablement best practice guide if you'd like that as well. It's got lots of tools, tips related to what we're talking about here. Most importantly, though, is the bacon recipe. It's got an asterisk next to award-winning because it really, as far as I know, hasn't really won any awards, but it's really good. I've liked it. How many of you like bacon? How many of you ever made bacon? Like, not like cook it, but like actually make it? Okay, how many of you are vegetarians? All right, so earmuffs just for the couple seconds. So bacon is really easy to make. Like, you don't have to go get a pig. You go to Costco, right? You go to Costco, and Costco will sell you. I mean, you could go to Whole Foods or anywhere, but Costco will sell you, like, this, you know, nice square piece of pork belly. And you rub it up with this mixture of sugar and salt. And you can do molasses. You can do brown sugar, whatever your flavors you want. And you put that in the fridge for a week, and you let it cure. And a week later, you basically have bacon. Like, the hardest part about making bacon is waiting for bacon. Right? And so then a week later, you've got this bacon, and if you want to smoke it, you put it on the cool side of the grill. If you have a Weber kettle, you start a fire on one side, you put the bacon on the other side, you put some wood chips in there, and then you end up with bacon. Again, the hardest part is waiting for bacon. You will never buy store bacon ever again if you do this. So if you want to try making bacon, I've tried making a bunch of different types of bacon. This award-winning asterisk recipe is the easiest and the fastest, and I think is the best. So either come give me a business card or send me an email. And I will get you, if you really want the marketing stuff, fine, but the bacon is really what I'm selling here, clearly. All right, show of hands for those of you that are producing content for your sales team. Pretty much everyone, right? Keep your hands up if you are frustrated with how sales uses your content. Usually at this point, like people say, yeah, I produce content for sales. And the second question, like emphatic hands go up, right? I've seen stats that say up to 90% of content we create for sales goes unused. And I'm not convinced that that's because it's not good. I'm not convinced that it's because they don't like it. In many cases, because they can't find it. In many cases, because it doesn't appeal to the right buyer at the right stage of the buying process. So what a lot of companies unfortunately do is they start creating less content, which isn't the right answer. If you create less content and you create one size fits all, it's one size fits none. You end up with content that now the sales team really doesn't want to use because it's not what their prospects want to hear. And part of the reason I'm going to focus so much on part of the reason we are doing this sales enablement track today and tomorrow is because we have a bad reputation as marketers. When we focus on creating content, when we focus on retweets, when we focus even on generating leads, we're not in alignment with the organization. We're not acting like a profit center. We're not managing the full funnel. So the organization kind of thinks this is what we do. We are exacerbating this problem where I literally had a company tell me once, they said, well, marketing, that's pretty much our arts and crafts department, right? They go and they order t-shirts for the trade show, and they redo the logo, and they make sure we're using the right font and all our proposals, right? I mean, this is true. I mean, like, I've literally, like, you sales, how many of you are in sales? You're in sales? Like, at the end of the month, at the end of the quarter, you're grinding it out, trying to get deals done, right? Like, you're like, don't come in here. We're going to close deals, but you don't want to see how it's going to get done. Like, you're trying to get them done. Meanwhile, marketing, they're over at the bar celebrating because they hit their retweet goal, right, for the quarter. I wish that was a joke. It's a true story. That actually happened. It actually happened in an organization where the CMO said, we are completely aligned with sales. We are 100% aligned with what sales needs, right? So talk is cheap. What are you actually doing as marketers to make this better? Sales enablement, I think, has traditionally been a sales function. It's come out of sales operations. Sales operations and sales admin has traditionally been a tactical, reactive, administrative job. Sales operations has been much of the same, and you just add a little bit of technology. Sales enablement, no matter who owns it, is now strategic, it's leveraged. I could argue it's the most important part of the entire sales organization. If you have 5 salespeople, if you have 50 salespeople, if you have 500 salespeople, your content, your policies, your processes, your technology can have an exponential impact on how well they're doing. Right? Our job as marketers is changing, it's evolving. The lines between sales and marketing is blurring. I put this one up just because it's funny. Have you seen this one from Dilbert? There is a lot of marketing that is still liquor and guessing, thank God, right? But this isn't what we want people to think of us as. So quick couple comments before we get into sort of these 8 things specifically you could do to double productivity of your sales team. This is a chart from a company called Demand Metric. And what I like about this is not just because it's pretty, but what this looks at here is you've got the integration between sales and marketing teams, how well those teams are working together. And really, this is mostly marketing's job to step up and own this. The degree to which marketing teams come together and the likelihood that you're hitting your revenue numbers, it's a direct correlation. And what I also like about this is it's not black and white. If you're not doing anything from a sales enablement standpoint, if you're not doing any of the 8 things we're going to talk about here in the next 23 minutes, just do 1 or 2 of them when you get back. Put the rest on the side and pick 1 or 2 of them to start doing. You can start to make an impact. And look at the words at the bottom, right? You go from none to ineffective to minimally to moderate. So if you're not doing any sales enablement work today, what this chart says, if you go doing none to doing it shitty, you will start to increase your number. You will start to close more deals. Feel free to break some glass. You will have a sales organization and a sales leadership and a C-suite that appreciates that you're putting more of your time into helping close deals, right? That you're partnering with the sales organization, that you are now acting not as the arts and crafts department, but as a profit center. Look at the metrics, this is a little bit of an aside, but look at the metrics you report on as a marketing team. Do you go tell your C-suite that you're focused on clicks and likes and open rates and click rates? That's what's in our dashboards. How many of your metrics do you have to explain to the rest of the organization? If you have to explain what an MQL means, that may not be what the CFO wants to look at. Feel free to separate your operational dashboard from your executive dashboard. Have a dashboard that looks at opens, clicks, retweets to manage your marketing, make your marketing better. But when you report your impact to the sales organization, talk about pipeline contribution. Talk about lifetime value. Talk about bringing the right customers in, not just because they close faster, but because they spend more money. Right? It changes the way you look at things. Question? Yeah.
So being able to show the influence, even though we maybe didn't hear the lead for them.
Yeah.
But showing the influence that we have on leads that they're currently.
It's a great question. So the question was, you know, should you start to look at the impact marketing has on opportunities that maybe marketing didn't source? I mean, Serious Decisions has some really good data, and I don't have it in here, that says the bigger the deal, the larger the deal, the more likely that opportunity was sourced by sales. That doesn't mean marketing doesn't have a job there, right? I mean, if you can blur these lines, if you can put politics aside and say, we are all in this together, we're all going to lose our jobs if we don't hit our number, right? Now, all of a sudden, you've got deals that you can impact. If it came from sales, great. How do you put better process in place? How do you give them better content? How do you align behind the bigger the organization, the more complex the internal buying committee? CEB says that there's 6.8 people on average that are part of the internal buying committee, right? So you're not selling to a building, right? Buildings don't write checks. People write checks, right? You want the logo from the building on your wall that you closed that deal, but if we act like we're talking to buildings, we're not doing a very good job. Right? The fundamentals of doing this full funnel, this profit center marketing are pretty simple. First, you got to do the math, right? It's amazing to me how many companies, how many marketers don't do the math. Marketers that have an MQL goal that has nothing to do with the sales goal. It was developed based on how much budget they have or how many leads they generated last year plus 10%. Very simple math. How many deals do I need to generate? How big a pipeline do we need to get those deals? How many leads to get to that pipeline? The leads, some of those leads may come from sales, some may come from marketing. Doesn't matter. One spreadsheet, one simple spreadsheet that's your basis for what you have to generate. Your customer profile. For those of you that have been part of the ABM sessions, right? At some point as you're doing ABM or any kind of target account selling, who are the right accounts? Not just because they're the biggest accounts in your market, not just because they've got the best names. What are the companies that you're most likely to close? What are the characteristics and attributes of accounts in your market that make them most likely to understand what you're selling? And who are those 6.8 people? What roles do they have? Who are the decision makers? Who are the stakeholders? Who are the influencers? Inside and outside the organization. Some people you don't get to talk to, but who are going to be deal breakers or deal makers for you inside the organization. The better you understand that, the more precise your content, the more precise your marketing, the more precise direction you can give your sales team on how to talk to those people. So if you understand those 6.8 people, if you understand the stages they go through, I love listening to Tim from Corporate Visions. Hopefully most, if not all of you, went into the session this morning. Serious Decisions has a 6-stage buying journey. It starts with challenging, they call it loosening the status quo. How do you introduce something your prospect didn't understand? How do you help them quantify a problem they did or didn't know that they have? The next stage is a commitment to change. Not a commitment to your product, but a commitment to change for themselves. Those two stages are just the first two stages of a 6-stage buying process. The rest of it looks like a traditional sales process, but getting to a commitment to change from that prospect is the hardest part of the sales process. And marketers today have more power and more control of that part of the sales process than ever before. Now, to figure that out, for those of you that are in the weeds trying to execute, if someone asked a question at the end of the Forrester presentation, this is all great, how do we do any of this stuff, right? I mean, you're gonna break glass. Every one of us has a unique business. You can read all the management books you want, you can read all the marketing best practices you want. Your business, your industry, your culture internally is different. What works for someone else may or may not work for you. So you have to constantly be testing, constantly firing bullets. We all need cannons. If you've read the book Great by Choice, it talks about the difference between phenomenal companies and mediocre companies. The phenomenal companies are those that don't build cannons first. They fire bullets, right? Not every bullet's gonna hit the mark, but they fire and they fire and eventually something hits the mark and they test it a couple more times and they validate that it works. They put down the gun and they pick up the cannon. Yes, that takes a little longer, but sometimes 3 steps is faster than 1 to get to where you wanna go. And what we've seen, and I know that this may be where you want the deck because I know it's kinda hard to see this, what we've seen from those mediocre companies is when we ask them questions about sales enablement type work, when we ask them, is this function important? Training and onboarding, producing content, helping your prospects, helping your sales team find content. High importance, low effectiveness. This data is about a year old. We just did this research again. We launched it a couple weeks ago, and the gap is widening. The gap between the perceived importance and perceived execution. And the companies that do and don't have sales enablement programs, or at least have a dedicated sales enablement function, is where we're really seeing the divide. Right? Not only a divide in terms of like the efficacy of programs and the efficacy of these efforts, but also in results and conversion rates. So the data is telling us as we go out and talk to sales teams and marketers that are doing sales enablement, doing the things we're about to talk about, those that are doing that are seeing revenue growth faster than others. They're seeing conversion rates of leads and opportunities faster than others. I'm happy to get you a copy of that research report. It's about 2 weeks old, not part of this. Okay, let's talk about, I've got about 16 minutes, let's talk about 8 keys to productivity. The first one is CRM ownership. How many of you in marketing have ownership of CRM, of whatever CRM system you use? When we ask sales reps what are the 3 biggest wastes of time for them when they're not selling, number 3 they said was trying to find content. Number 2 was creating content. Number 1, CRM. Right? We ask our sales rep to spend way too much time adding information, much of which we don't use. We did an audit with a couple clients where we looked at how much they were putting into CRM, how much information they were asking of the sales reps on a regular basis that was taking their time away from selling, and then we went and said, well, how is that data being used? The majority of that data, in many cases, does not get used. It doesn't get reported on. So if it's not getting used, why are we asking them to input it? Oftentimes we'll say, well, we don't want to buy this data add-on. We don't want to buy this augmentation tool because we don't have budget for it, right? We don't have an extra couple $1,000 to spend this year on this tool, and yet we're fine having a 100-person sales team spend all day Friday manually creating reports in CRM because they have to go get away from selling and add something in that could be done manually. So your ability to manage proactively how CRM is used, how it's operationalized, Most CRM administrators, for some reason, I think, consider it their job to make CRM as custom and complicated as possible. You are successful in managing CRM for your sales teams if they spend as little time in CRM as possible. You want your reps to spend more time following up on your leads. You want your reps to spend more time following your entire lead follow-up process. Take the non-active selling time work off of their plates. The average B2B seller spends 25% of their time actively selling. 25%. It will never be 80%. You always have, I mean, as a seller, you're always spending time preparing a sale, you're researching, you're in meetings, that's fine. But what would happen if you could get your sales team from 25 to 33%? Just 25 to 33% across your entire sales team. I mean, do the math on the productivity gain you would get from that. The level to which they could follow up on more leads, do deeper follow up on leads, do deeper research and deeper engagement with your target accounts, right? And the three biggest things you can focus on there, one, minimizing time in CRM, two, creating content for them, more of the content they need, not just collateral, not just blog posts, email templates, voicemail scripts, and three is making it easier to find that content. We'll get into those in a second. Number two is tools integration. How many of you have multiple tools in your marketing technology stack that the sales team uses? Right. It seems like the options for our sales team continues to increase on a regular basis. The number of tools we're buying for sales teams, for sales reps to use that are under the auspice of making them more successful and making them more productive goes up on a regular basis. But what we do, unfortunately, too often is we buy the tool, we launch it at sales kickoff, and then we move on to the next tool. We don't reinforce how to use it. We don't adequately train for it. We don't learn how our team is using it and make adjustments to how that's being used. And then what happens is 3 months later, we bought another tool and now we're launching that one. Now all of a sudden the sales team has all these tools that they either don't know how to use or aren't using, and you're spending time and money on them. Taking the time to integrate tools, not just into the rest of your marketing technology stack, but into the process. Sometimes I think as marketers and as modern marketers, we get really enamored with our tech stack. Sometimes tool integration means having a checklist. It just means having a process that everyone can follow on a consistent basis. For those of you who haven't read the book, The Checklist Manifesto, like there are checklists you can create for yourself that seem menial, it seems kind of parochial, but you'll remember more of the things you need to be doing consistently on a regular basis. Your sales team will have the same thing. What should your sales reps do first thing when they get in the morning? Does every rep know what that is? Are they following that consistently? When you're integrating tools together, how do they know how to use it? How do they know when not to use it? Making that really clear, taking the time up front to document that and do the integration will not only save a lot of time, but get your reps to use more of those tools more often. I mentioned before how much information we're putting into CRM, much of which doesn't get used. Rule of thumb, if you have a report or a dashboard that includes a metric that you can't take action on, rethink why it's there. If you see the wrong metric in a report, the metric you don't want to see, and you can't take action on that, if you don't have a next step on something to fix it, then someone's wasting their time adding it, someone's wasting their time looking at it, someone's wasting their time building it. Right? I'm sure we've all, and I've faced this a number of times, I'm sure we've all faced the CFO or the CEO coming in, I want to start tracking this, I want to start tracking that, I want to see this metric, I want to see this metric. If it's for pure curiosity, that's fine, until it takes time away from your sales team. I've literally seen sales managers spend all day Friday like just building reports, right? Some of which that don't get read, right? If you're spending time building reports, if you're spending time in CRM, that's time not selling. If you're a sales manager, your time building reports is less time coaching, less time working with your reps to have customized approaches to your biggest deals. The more time they're doing reports that don't matter, the less they're selling. So number three is reporting. Number four is process improvement. I talked a little bit about this in terms of tech integration. I don't know what this process is. I literally Googled terrible process and this is what showed up. And I literally the other day finally actually tried to read it and I have no idea what's going on here. But think about I was never, early in my career, I was not a big process guy. I thought process was getting in my way of being creative and agile and it's just draconian and I didn't want to do it. And I've learned the hard way over the years that the opposite is true. I mean, think about the checklist you can have for yourself. Think about the processes you can put in front of your sales team that can make them more successful, that can help them spend less time doing the tasks that they have to do and more time being creative, more time in front of their prospects. Sometimes this is a simple checklist. It might be up in my room. I've got a daily to-do list that I've been following for years, and it's a combination of networking and prospecting and lead follow-up tasks, and it's stuff I've been doing for years. You would think it'd be hardwired into my head, but I'm doing a bunch of other stuff, right? And so literally I have this, I look at it every morning, I have a laminated version that I travel with, And so instead of spending like half the day meandering through these tasks, they're all done in 15, 20 minutes. All that stuff gets done more consistently, more reliably, more predictably. Again, what do you want your sales reps to do in the morning? What lead follow-up process do you want them to follow? If you can embed it into a tool like a Salesforce or an Outreach or an Acton, great. But sometimes having a process is just having a checklist, like just telling people how to execute. Number five is best practice collection. This is how a lot of people store their best practices. You go to the sales rep, I think this actually may have come from a sales rep's desktop once, where I said like, oh, you know, where's the case studies that you need to be showing? Oh, I'll show you where they are, they're right here. Right, it was like case study like five versions ago, like, and you've updated it four times since then, but they really like the version five times ago, so they still use this. I mean, your sales team is constantly evolving. No matter what process you put in front of your sales team, your best sales reps are going to game the system. Find the reps that are gaming it well. Find the reps that are making your system better and train the rest of the organization on that. But probably more importantly than identifying the best practice is reinforcing and storing it so other people can find it. What often happens in sales best practices is someone identifies something like, great, I'm gonna give you 5 minutes in the next sales stand-up. Can you go and talk about that? Great. So Friday at the sales stand-up, they share that best practice. Congratulations, that's fantastic. Everyone go use that, right? If you missed the sales stand-up, you didn't get it. If you start the following week, you didn't get it. If you were at that sales stand-up, but you were like Snapchatting and not paying attention, you didn't get it, right? So how do you make sure, and again, like all of these things we're talking about here so far, many of these are traditionally sales operations functions. These sound like things the sales team does. We as marketers, we have an opportunity, guys. We have an opportunity to step up and own this. Right? It's not just about leads. It's not just about traditional marketing activities. If you create a process that helps the sales team collect proactively the best practices, to inventory those in a system. If you've got like a SharePoint system, if you've got a HighSpot system, great. If you have just a spreadsheet that people understand, I've seen companies use project management tools like Smartsheet, where they just inventory all their stuff. They make it easy to search, easy to find. Train your team not only how to find it, but make sure that your sales managers are proactively going and finding those as well and know where those are cataloged. So that's number five. Number six is vendor selection. I've seen a lot of companies that, you know, that will have a sales manager's part-time job go and evaluate certain tools. Well, what criteria are they using for that? Just because a product you evaluate has all the features doesn't mean you need all those features. If you were to ask me on the marketing automation front, what's the best marketing automation platform in the industry? That answer would be irrelevant to 99% of companies that we talk to. Right? There are companies that based on their approach, based on what they're executing, they don't, I mean, no offense to whoever's in the room from these companies, like Marketo, even Acton, maybe overkill. Maybe all you need is MailChimp and Unbounce for the way you're executing right now. So when you're evaluating vendors, instead of thinking about like how many checkboxes you can get from the vendor you want to select, start with what am I trying to achieve? What are my outcomes? What am I trying to get done? If you're looking to optimize your marketing technology stack, start with the bottlenecks in your process. Where are the places that you're manual today that you want to automate? Where are the biggest roadblocks to success that you want to accelerate? If you're not regularly doing an audit of your marketing technology, I highly recommend doing that. Features that were novel 2 years ago, the fact that you could actually see opens and click rates of your prospects. Like a couple years ago, that was a novel feature. Now it's probably in half the tools that you buy. Do you know what the objective is for every tool that you buy? Do you know why you're buying something? Do you have measures of success for every vendor you're evaluating? It can be a service provider, it can be a consultant, it can be a tool. Why are you buying it? What kind of results do you want to see from it? And are you then going back and making sure you're getting those results? And what happens if after a while you're no longer getting those results? Well, I hope you're measuring that so you can kick that vendor to the curb or kick that tech tool to the curb. There's only so much you can manage in a given period of time. So selecting those vendors, I think, is a marketing function. Like, take control of why you need it, create the business rules, integrate it successfully, audit it over time, evaluate, and make sure that those tools are actually useful. This relates to the people that are doing sales enablement, sales operations. I think, honestly, even though it's a marketing function, I think sometimes the best people for sales enablement are former sales reps. It could be former sales managers, but people that have been on the front lines. They're used to not only talking to customers on a regular basis, they're used to being in the weeds. They know what the sales process is like. They know what the sales culture is like. Right? There's a level of credibility of having someone that's been in sales be the front person for you in marketing to go and tell the sales team, here's the new processes we have. Because remember, you walk out of this session, you fly home in the next couple days, and you go back and you say, I got all these great ideas. If you have exacerbated the idea that you are the arts and crafts department, if this organization is not used to hearing you aligned with sales results and pipeline contribution, there's going to be a path to build credibility around this. Bringing people from the marketing organization into the table and into the tent with you to do this is a way to quickly sort of fast forward building that credibility. This relates to not just tools your team's using, not just the collateral being used, email templates, follow-up scripts. There's no such thing as a sales script. But if you send a sales team, if you send a sales rep a lead today and it's a really good white paper lead, like if they call up and say, hey, thanks for downloading the white paper, would you like to see a demo? Has anyone ever answered yes to that question in the history of time? No. Like that's our sales team wants. It's what we want. I want a demo. I want a presentation. I want to move as quickly as possible through this sales process. But it doesn't work that way. What I'd rather see sales teams say is, thanks very much for downloading the white paper. Did you get a chance to read it? Well, of course not. Who reads white papers? But what about that topic was interesting to you? Like, why? What about the headline? What about the email? What about this topic is prescient to something going on in your organization right now? Why did you intentionally put yourself on our spam list to get access to a PDF? What's going on? And if you understand your personas well enough, who you're talking to, you can follow that up by saying, you know, I get to talk to people in your shoes all day long. And when I ask them what their biggest challenges are, I tend to hear the same three things over and over again, right? List those three things off. Which of those just made you a little sweatier? Which of those just gave you a little shiver just thinking about it because you're dealing with it right now, keeping you up at night? Like, if they don't have any of those three, it might not be a good prospect, right? We call it a funnel, not a cylinder, for a reason. But, like, find one of those things that you can dig in on. Like, talk about that loosening of the status quo. That problem may be something that they've tried to ignore. They've decided to go focus on other things and pretend this problem goes away. So I bring up this example because sales teams are not building these scripts on their own. Right? Sales managers just say, get the demo, get the deal. You should not assume and not count on the fact that your sales managers and sales teams know the personas and know the buying journey better than you. Right? Nor do salespeople want to write their own content. Right? It tends to be kind of a controversial topic in the sales world. Should salespeople be creating content? Should they be bloggers? A lot of salespeople are pretty good writers, but that's not why we hired them. You know, writing content is a non-active selling job. I'd rather have those sales reps actively selling. So when you can take control of the templates your team uses, when you can take control of the processes they're following, the follow-up email, the earlier the relationship you have with the prospect, the shorter the email should be. I mean, like literally, like 100 words or less. When's the last time you got a follow-up from downloading a white paper and it was like this long email where they're trying to like sell you the whole deal right away, right? Unless you're doing like one call closes, the job of the follow-up to your white paper is not to close the deal, it's to earn some attention, right? You have this much time. So knowing that's part of the buying process, knowing that's the stage of the relationship, build those templates. Help your reps better understand that. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the conversation, make sure you're creating more content for the sales team, not less. Think about the different situations, the different personas. You've got 6.8 people on the buying journey. You've got multiple industries you're selling into. So the CMO in a healthcare company, CMO in a manufacturing company might have different angles and different things you want to say to them. You've got different stages of the buying process, at least six if you listen to serious decisions. And now you apply that to the different assets you might be offering someone. How would that message to that persona in that stage of the buying journey be slightly different if they came from a trade show, or if they came from a white paper, or they came from a dinner your sales team had in the city they were visiting last week, whatever it was, right? The more precise content you create, and again, we're not talking about writing books for each of these situations, like this much content. Like your job is, like the job of the direct mail envelope is not to close a deal, it's to get you to open the envelope. So the more you can not only create more of that content, but make it easier to find, make it easier to access. And this isn't just launching a SharePoint, launching a SmartSheet, launching a whatever, it's reinforcing that. It's making sure that you're talking about that on a regular basis. Integrate those tools and those processes into everything else your sales team is doing. And that's it. I've got 36 seconds, so it's right on time. If you'd like the book, great. If you want the sales enablement best practice guide, fine. If you want the bacon, I'm all about the bacon, clearly. So happy to share that with you as well. Bring me business cards, send me an email. Thanks very much for your time. I'm emceeing myself now. So any questions for Matt? Yes. Yeah. Right. Not just tell them your content sucks. I'm going to rewrite this for you. There are some people that are going to become defensive and territorial about what they've written, and maybe they really like it. But 9 times out of 10, I find that salespeople don't want to write their own content. They don't think it's good. Like, they may say, I think I'm a good writer, but I don't know what I'm talking, I don't know what to say, I don't know the context, like, help me understand that. So, I think if you sort of say, listen, like, here's what I know about the context, here's what I know about you're getting this, here's what I know about the attention span you're gonna have, right? I know you wanna get someone into a demo right now, and again, right into a presentation, but sometimes 3 steps is faster than one. So you're gonna see a better response rate on the short email that has nothing to do with your product or service, and it has everything to do with just sort of this need, this status quo you're trying to challenge or loosen. Most people lean into that, you know? If you still get pushback on that, there's some other reasons going on there, right? And that may be a bit of an escalation issue, but I think the majority of the time, like, you come to that with the, you know, not only with the best of intentions, but a little bit of empathy as well. You know, I think let people know that, like, I can make this better for you. I can let you go back and do what you want to do. Like, you don't make money. You don't make commissions writing content. You make commissions calling and closing customers. So go do that. I'll do my job. Yeah. Any other questions? All right. We have a 8-minute break. So feel free to stay in here, hang out. They'll have some lovely parting music for us. So we're going to start again at about 11:40. One more session, and then we're going to break for lunch. So thanks very much.